CityTalk 105.9 official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm. Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. CityTalk 105.9.
Hello and welcome to City Talks Business with me, Frank McKenna. I'm the chairman of the independent private sector lobby group and business networking club Downtown Liverpool in Business, and every Sunday I'll be taking a look at some of the week's big business stories and talking to some key personalities, decision makers and entrepreneurs who work in and influence Liverpool and the wider northwest region. The Labour Party conference kicks off in Liverpool today, and I'll be asking what benefits this brings to our city, what will delegates be discussing, and why cities are the places where political parties choose to congregate nowadays rather than seaside resorts. In the news, the IMF have downgraded the UK's growth forecasts, putting us behind Germany, France, the United States and even Canada. Is there anything Chancellor George Osborne can do to halt the decline? And can the euro survive? And what part will entrepreneurs play in our recovery as Liverpool prepares to host the Global Entrepreneurship Congress in 2012? To discuss this and more, I'm sure, I'm joined in the studio today by Labour MP for Wirral, Alison McGovern, and Emma Hunter, who is the Head of Student Enterprise at John Moores University. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Alison, Wirral what? Because there's east, west, north, south. I mean,
south.
Me and mortals like me.
South.
Wirral south.
Yeah, Bebbington, Bromborough, Port Sunlight, New Ferry, Haswell and Thornton Hoff.
Right, and a cuddly toy.
And,
of course, before we get into the meat of what we want to discuss this morning, there have been some documents released recently around boundary changes and so on. Can you just explain to the listeners what that means and what effect it will have in your part of the world?
Well, essentially what happened was the government forced through a bill through the House of Commons to get the Boundary Commission to change the parliamentary boundaries so that they were roughly all the same size of between 76 and about 80,000. What this means is that old considerations of geography and community ties have gone out the window a bit, and it's all about the numbers. And what that means for us in Wirral is that effectively some of my constituents are going to be pushed into a huge constituency stretching all the way to Frodsham and beyond there to Northwich. Now, I don't think this is a particularly good suggestion. I don't think it's that great for my constituents. So this is just the first draft. So we're going to be looking at it. And the consultation finishes on the 5th of December. So I would just say to everybody, whether in Liverpool, Wirral or around and about, just have a look on the Boundary Commission's website, check where you are and check that their proposals look sensible. Because to be honest, it looks a bit like some blokes just drawn on the lines on a map rather than actually thought about the communities that go together. So we've just got to be a bit cautious and careful about that one as we go forward.
Because the changes do affect the whole of the country. It's not just Wirral, I should point out.
They affect right across the country. Yeah. It affects all, you know, everywhere people are. If they think they know what parliamentary constituency they're in now, they think they know who their MP is, that will be the same till the next election. But I would say log on to the Boundary Commission's website, just have a look and check what the proposal is for you at the next election, because you could get quite a shock.
Mm. Big changes. And it's all to do with a reduction in the number of MPs, isn't
it? Yeah, the government wants us to go from 650 to 600 MPs. You know, that's okay. We can all argue
about
the numbers.
Some people would say that's still too many,
yeah.
Alison, to be honest.
Well, when you've got, you know, well over 800 members of the House of Lords, you know, I think we might look there first. But the most important thing is that because of this strict restriction on the numbers, geography and community ties are less important. So people just want to log on to the Boundary Commission website and check which constituency they're going to be in, because they might get quite a shock.
Okay, now let's move on to the economy, because as well as being an MP for Wirral South, you're also Gordon Brown's private parliamentary secretary, is that right?
That's right.
And so obviously you spend a fair bit of time with the former Prime Minister, and the Deputy Prime Minister, the now Deputy Prime Minister, Nick Clegg, was speaking at his conference in Birmingham this week, the Liberal Democrat conference, and, well, it's all Gordon's fault, isn't it, this economic mess we're in?
Well, they would say that, wouldn't they? I mean, you know, Gordon led the country at the time of the global crash, hopefully, you know, the worst we've seen, although who knows with what's happening in the Eurozone. And he was the person who, you know, really set out a vision for recapitalising the banks and then moving us forward to global growth. What's happened since then is that governments have vacillated. We've seen, falling growth across Europe and America. You know, the reality is that growth is happening in Asian countries, in China, and in some of the new economies. And we have to work out as a country how we're going to push our economy forward, how we're going to export things to them. And that means investing in the infrastructure we've got now. All of this, you know, budget cuts is not helping. We said it wouldn't help at the time, and look, we've seen growth forecast down, and in fact, you know, the deficit now getting worse, with I think the Financial Times estimated a 12 billion hole in George Osborne's budget this week. So for me, it's really worrying that George Osborne said the only way to fix the deficit is to cut back on everything and that will get us through. It just hasn't happened. Actually, what we need is a bit of investment in our future, and, you know, a chance to export to the consumer countries of the future. And unless we have those growth plans in place right across Europe and America, I feel very worried for the world.
In fairness, what Nick Clegg would say is that this week he's announced a big spend in terms of capital infrastructure projects, which he believes will help kickstart the economy. They would also argue, the government, wouldn't they, that they inherited a huge public deficit that needed to be addressed. And unlike the US, that have this really strong currency, the dollar, we haven't got that safety net to fall back upon. So it's okay for Obama to say, well, we're going to go trillions and trillions of dollars into debt and keep throwing money at the problem. But for a tiny island such as the UK, they would say that if we just continue to try and spend our way out of trouble, we are going to end up in a situation where the credit agencies do really come after the UK, and it's going to be much more expensive for us to borrow cash. And in fact, where we are now would look like a good place if we simply continue the policy of spend.
Frank, I'm really sorry, but I spotted quite a few government spin bits there. There's at least three myths, I'm afraid, in that lot. Let's just go through them. Firstly, Nick Clegg said this week maybe they might have some investment to do. There was rumours coming out of their conference that maybe perhaps it was 5 billion, but we've heard no details. And the last news report I saw, there was absolutely no sign of the reality of this. So when Osborne or Clegg or somebody gets up in the House of Commons and explains exactly what they're investing in with what, then I'll believe it. But until then, I'll keep my counsel. The idea of our debt being unsustainable or unaffordable, actually, we pay less in debt repayments than Margaret Thatcher did. We are a large economy that has managed its debt pretty well, and it's reasonable to say that in a time of great crisis you should have some debt on the books as long as it's affordable, and our debt is much more affordable than it's been in the past. You know, this idea of the worst peacetime debt is just it's ridiculous. It's not the case. The final myth there that was coming out was that, you know, somehow that Britain was on the brink of collapse or what have you. It's a political myth that suits them just well to think that that somehow Britain was about to go under. And actually, the British economy has been robust. But the thing that's going to hold us back now is unemployment is sending a message around the world that the British economy is not out of the danger zone. Far from it. We're not paying down the deficit because growth isn't happening. We've got people losing their jobs left, right and centre. That's what's got to be tackled. That's the problem. You know, George Osborne can spin his political myths all he likes. And, you know, I'm afraid I will be an oppositional politician about this one, because I just think it's too important for these myths to get hold. What we've got to say is the most important thing that we can do is get people back to work, export into other countries, and that will build our economy for the future.
Mm. And it's the Tory party conference in Manchester next week, and we are hoping to have another Wirral MP on the show next week, Esther McVeigh, who I'm sure will put an alternative view for,
oh, no doubt,
from that that,
no
that
doubt.
You've just expressed. But interesting, Emma, the welcome again.
Thank you.
Back to the show. Last time you were on, we were talking about the impact of tuition fees, and of course we're talking about Nick Clegg and the Liberal Democrats, and he's been trying desperately to defend the U-turn that they did once they formed the coalition with the Tories. Have you started to see an impact yet at JMU, or do you think it's a bit too early?
Well, we've seen a record number of applications for this academic year. I think we had a very small amount of places to offer through clearing, purely because people want to get through and into the system before the new tuition fees come into play. But after that,
kids of six are applying now, aren't they?
Not quite, but we certainly know that a lot more students are not taking a gap year this year. Right. But where it goes from there, I think no one can tell at this point.
Mm. Is it still tough, do you think, to predict how many people are actually going to be totally put off going to university in the future because of the new system that's going to be introduced, or have any universities done some number crunching around this?
I think it's too early to call on that one. I think the first year of the new fees regime will certainly give us a good indication. But personally, I think the number of students will go down quite significantly.
Okay, well, we wait and see, and obviously hope that's not the case. But with your hat on as the head of student enterprise at JMU, you obviously keep a watchful eye on what's happening in the economy. Were you surprised this week that the IMF had downgraded the UK's growth forecasts? And in particular, you know, because we keep seeing this bad news, don't we, about the Eurozone and Germany and France and Italy and all these countries, but putting us behind some of those nations. Did that come as a bit of a shock to you?
It does, because from my perspective, working very much on the ground with new businesses coming forward, it's been quite buoyant for us. We're seeing a lot of new interest in business models being put to us, where we've never had as many graduates interested in starting their own business as they have done this year, and we're feeling that the outlook is quite positive. So I suppose that does kind of contradict economists.
Well, it's booking the trend, and I don't. Mm. I mean, the one thing I would say about economists is they are, you know, they're like the modern day Mystic Megs, aren't they? Because they seem to get it right as often as the weathermen do. You know, said we were going to have a heatwave this summer, because it wasn't that long ago that they were predicting 2.5-3% growth, and now that's been scaled back to 1.1%. But again, when you say that you're seeing, you know, good numbers of people coming forward with ideas, initiatives for business startups, is the support and help there for those students beyond the university environment, do you think?
Well, we look after them for up to 5 years after they graduate. There are a whole raft of organisations on Merseyside that can assist new businesses and young businesses, and also businesses that want to grow. I don't know what will happen after business, you know, the legacy of Business Link going. That's up for grabs. But certainly from a graduate point of view, I think Liverpool is a really good place for a graduate to come to start their business.
Mm. Alison, because again, you know, towards the end of the last administration, we did see a big push of investment into things like Business Link, into the regional development agencies and so on. From your perspective, I guess, you know, everyone would expect you to say, well, that should have continued. But in the absence of that, do you think there's anything the government could do now to actually start to inject some incentives for entrepreneurs and to try and get the growth within the private sector that they've talked about?
Well, one of the things that I'm very focused on, can I just say, actually, on your point about economists, that's really interesting, because I think the importance of what Emma's talking about is absolutely vital that we get this clear, that a lot of economists before the recession said that Liverpool would come out worst, and we did not, and we should celebrate that fact. Actually, Merseyside did all right in the last recession, and we're continuing to grow, and I think we should really celebrate that.
Mm. Hold that thought, because I do want to get your comments on what I've just asked you in terms of what we can do for an enterprise culture. But we're approaching our first break. doesn't it fly when you're having fun? We'll be back after a short advertorial. Please stay with us.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9.
So we're joined in the studio this week by Wirral South MP Alison McGovern, who's also the PPS to Gordon Brown, and Emma Hunter, the head of student enterprise at John Moores University. Before the break, Alison was just about to tell us what the Chancellor needs to do to encourage an enterprise culture in the UK. And as I was saying, Alison, you know, we understand and appreciate the Business Links Regional Development Agencies. They've gone, whether we agree or we disagree. And I was one of the critics of that particular move. But we are where we are. So if you were advising the Chancellor at this moment in time, what are the sort of initiatives, things that you think he ought to be doing to try and kickstart the private sector growth that they so desperately need to really begin to compensate for the public expenditure cuts that are beginning to bite?
I tell you what, if I could have 5 minutes with the Chancellor, what I would say to him is walk just round the back of your building and go and see the HMRC, Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs, and tell them to pull their finger out and stop giving some of the businesses in my patch a hard time. Because actually, I have more and more businesses coming to my surgery now, talking to me about the manner in which they've been treated by tax officers. And, you know, we do our level best to get through to them and try and get people to see some common sense and, you know, do not let a good business go to the wall just for the sake of bureaucracy. But if I was the Chancellor, you know, HMRC are, you know, pretty much under his control, I would say, how do we have a customer-focused culture in some of the way that businesses are dealt with by the government? I would say the next thing you need to do is go and see your friend Eric Pickles in charge of local government and do exactly the same thing over the way that local government treat businesses. Because we can all whinge about the planning system or whatever, but sometimes it's a matter of customer service. I mean, you must hear this all the time, as I do. And I try desperately to get our local authorities to be business focused and to see that, you know, if a business comes to them with a problem over rates or a location or a planning permission or whatever, they need an answer that day. You know, they need a phone call or an answer and a positive response that day. And if I'm honest, I don't think we've got that right yet. So, yeah, it's got to be about making sure that the structure of incentives is right. We can do all of that. But if at the end of the day, when you ring up as a business and say, we've got a cash flow problem, you get faced with a wall of bureaucracy, that will not help anybody. So it's one of the things that I've been most focused on, trying to get the message through. I think there's lots of things that you can do. I'm a big fan of time to pay, to make sure that, as I say, good businesses aren't let down from a perspective of cash flow, whereas if there was more flexibility about their liabilities to government, you know, that's something that I think the government should be relaxed about. And I think there's a whole heap of issues around reputation. We've just had the Prime Minister release his Great Britain campaign today. I don't know if you've seen this.
Yeah.
Our big tourism campaign for next year. There's 5 images in London, 2 in Scotland and 1 in Leicestershire. Where's the Northwest? You know, that's the sort of thing that drives me absolutely up the wall. You know, we cannot have so-called British campaigns about visiting Britain that don't include Liverpool. It's a massively popular place to visit. And as soon as we get back to Parliament, I shall be making that point very vociferously to the Prime Minister.
Well, that was a really surprising thing about that whole campaign to me, because if there is an area where you could say there is some potential growth and there are some good news stories in the north of the country, then, you know, we couldn't have a better example, could we, than Labour Party conference here in Liverpool.
Absolutely.
Today. We've got, you know, thousands of delegates, journalists, news people from all over the world visiting our great city and the new offer that we've got now. And yet, as you say, Alison, a government campaign kicking off with no mention, not only of Liverpool, but, you know,
nothing
of Manchester,
the Lake
District, by
nothing,
the way.
Exactly,
you know, that's not a bad place to
nothing
go.
Nothing of Wales. Yeah. You know, what about Snowdonia? I mean, look, you can't pick everywhere. I'm not saying you should have picked everywhere, but I just, when I looked at it, I thought, just let me check that there's a picture in there of somewhere outside London and the southeast. And I'm afraid I was really quite disappointed. You know, the regional development agencies used to be somewhat in the lead on encouraging tourism to our area. As you said,
political parties have decided, you know, we've got the Tories in Manchester and ourselves, the Labour Party in Liverpool, the political parties have decided that these cities are where it's at. You know, the government's behind the curve on this one. We've got to sell the message abroad. If you ask people from other countries, you know, what they know about Britain, you know, I'm sorry, but they're going to talk about Premier League football teams. They're going to talk about bands and music. The idea that British tourism is all about, you know, Windsor Castle and Oxford and Cambridge these days, I'm afraid, is just old news.
And I'm sure, Emma, you shared our surprise as far as that was concerned, because again, last time you were on, we were saying how much of a boost the tourism and destination city had really helped Liverpool. As Alison was saying earlier, I suppose, book some of the predictions that were being made about our decline.
Definitely, yeah.
And the GEC Congress I want you to talk about, because that's here in 2012, and yet again is, you know, another fantastic event that will bring literally thousands of people into the city from all over the world.
Well, delegates from 118 countries are going to be attending the Festival of Entrepreneurship it's being badged at. And this is going to take, there's over a week of events that are going to be taking place, mainly in the conference centre, the arena. Starting with a whole weekend of startup activities for both young people and established businesses. We're hoping to get involved on with two fringe events where we're hoping to showcase the our new graduate businesses, and also look at the approach that we take to supporting graduate businesses, that so we can showcase our approach to the rest of the world as well.
And when's the Congress actually taking place? I know it's March, isn't it, of next year?
The startup weekend is the 9th to the 11th of March, and the Festival of Entrepreneurship starts on the 12th.
Okay, and if people, businesses, schools, anybody out there who's looking to get involved in what will, I think, be a fantastic week of activities, who would be the best person for them to contact?
They should go to the GEC website, which is www.gec2012.com.
Okay, and Alison knows this already. I am trying my very best to get Gordon Brown to come along as one of the keynote speakers during that week, but we await with bated breath his response.
He's a busy man. He does love Liverpool, though. He's a big fan of art, and he's a big fan of Kenny Dalglish, so...
Well, I won't comment on his political choices, but that's a real bad one, I have to say. But to be fair,
Frank, I should say that he's a big fan of David Moyes as well, as he often reminds me.
That makes more sense. But going back to this point about Liverpool being seen as a destination city now, but cities generally, why have the political parties decided to meet in Birmingham, Manchester, Liverpool? Why have cities all of a sudden become the vogue? Because it used to be, you know, you pack your bucket and spade and your speedos and you'd be off to Blackpool or Bournemouth or Brighton. What's happened?
Well, I think, I can't speak for, you know, the people at the Labour Party who make these decisions, but I guess, firstly, you used to go to the seaside because it was the only place with a lot of hotels. People didn't go and stay in cities. Whereas now, we all love a good city mini break, don't we? You know, and so there's a lot more hotels and it fits in nicely. The facilities are new. And I think, to be honest with you, I think some of our British cities, especially in the north, have got a buzz about them that political parties want to be a part of.
So you want the association with success, don't you?
Exactly.
Cities are where it's happening, and that's where you want to be seen.
Absolutely. And as I was saying before, you know, we've got the world's media will be piling in at the moment in Liverpool, and I think I know the city very well. We'll treat everybody well and make sure that the message gets sent out back with them that Liverpool is that exciting place, and it's absolutely the place to be. And you know, I think it's going to do a huge amount for our reputation, which is an important thing for businesses. I think, you know, we've got some developments coming up, Liverpool Waters, Wirral Waters, where we're going to need to sell our reputation. So having the party conference here this week, I think, is a phenomenal step forward on that.
And you see, it's great having you in from over on the Wirral, because one of the things that sticks in my craw a bit is this thing about Merseyside and having to include everyone, you know, from St Helens to Southport to Kirby to, I mean, God knows where, you know, places where, let's face it, anybody who sat in the United States or in China, or even in London for that matter, has never heard of. And hopefully, you know, never will really, because they're not the places that we want people to necessarily be seeing Liverpool's image cast in. So what is it about you people over on the Wirral that keeps dragging us back to this stupidity of trying to sell Merseyside? Because it'll never work, Alison. Liverpool is the brand.
It's outrageous. Well, look, listen, you know, I have a particular take on this because, as you know, Frank, my grandfather, Pete McGovern, wrote a little song called In My Liverpool Home, and then after 1980 proceeded to live the rest of his life on the Wirral. So, you know, I think of Liverpool as my city. You know, I don't have any bones about talking about Liverpool. But at the end of the day, I will be telling all my fellow Labour Party people that if they want a little afternoon out, that Port Sunlight Village is the place to go. If they want to go for a trip, you know, to the beach, that they want to get across to West Kirby, nice train station, walk down the road, lovely beach. So I think we've just
good luck to them in this weather.
I think we've just got to make the most of it. I have no problem with the brand of Liverpool. The thing that I do have a problem with is people not being inclusive of everybody's views and thoughts. So, you know, it matters to the success of the City of Liverpool that all the commuters in my patch, in the Wirral and wherever else, you know, St Helens or Knowsley or wherever else, or in Southport, can get in and out of our city as quickly as it matters that there's plenty of buses down the road to Zefton Park.
You were saying earlier,
you know, it's got to be everybody included.
Yeah, but you know, you were saying earlier about this Great Britain campaign that Cameron's launched, and he's not been as inclusive as he ought to have been. And I'll accept that, you know, the fact that it's very, very much southeast centric. But he's not going to have local authority leaders on the phone to him or politicians on the phone to him from anywhere in London complaining that their patch has been left out. Now, the problem when we do a marketing campaign in Liverpool is that you will get three mentions of Sefton, three mentions of the Wirral, three mentions of St Helens, because politicians are so precious and parochial about this nonsense that we end up diluting the brand.
Honest,
and
Frank, if you say
Liverpool's
sure.
the attack brand, well, I'll show you the documents.
Okay.
If you say Liverpool is the attack brand, then can you convince your colleagues that that's the case? Because we get dragged back so often because of the sensitivities around people from other parts of Merseyside, which do have great things to offer. And I was only half serious before when I said we wouldn't want anybody to know about those places. I was brought up in Skelmersdale. So, you know, I know what it's like to be living in a place where actually you don't want anybody to really be trying to promote, market and sell when you're looking for big investments and so on. But come on, Liverpool has got to be seen as a premier destination city now, and everybody else just has to get over it, don't they?
Well, OK, firstly, let me say, look at the Olympics, right? If I had a pound for every leader of a London borough where the Olympics is not, who's whinged about, oh, what's Lambeth or Southwark or whatever, you know, getting out of this, you know, I'd be a rich person, and I'm sure all of those perspectives exist. Now, they had to manage that in their own way to make sure that all of the, you know, Barnet and Camden and all of the different bits of London have got something out of it. And frankly, that all the bits of the country are getting something out of the Olympics. So it's the same wherever you go. Honestly, it's the same wherever you go. The thing you've got to do is be realistic about the economy. Our economy of this city won't survive unless we're all included together, because there aren't enough people in the City of Liverpool local authority boundaries to make the economy work. So let's include everybody from all parts of Merseyside. However, as you quite rightly point out, the lead brand that people have heard of around the world is Liverpool. Let's use that to our advantage and not get too worried about it. I mean, you know, frankly, most people that I know from the Wirral spend half their time trekking back and forwards, and that's fine. And, you know, we've just got to work together and try and be realistic about our best possibilities in the economy. I mean, I do take issue with what you said about we wouldn't want people to know about these places. I mean, look at Dream in St Helens. That's a beautiful sculpture that's, you know, made by an internationally renowned artist. Gormley in Sefton. You know, we do want people to go to these places and to know about them.
Yeah, and Ballantyne's Gym in Skelmersdale, for anybody who's listening, fantastic place. I go there all the time and it's a wonderful town. I am only joking, I promise. Right, I got half agreement, I think, there from Alison. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll be talking about how entrepreneurs and enterprise really can help drive our economy forward. Stay with us.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9.
Welcome back to the programme. We're joined in the studio this week by we're all South MP, Alison McGovern, and Emma Hunter, Head of Student Enterprise at John Moores University. We've been talking about all sorts of things, Labour Party conference that starts today here in the city. We've been talking about the economy and the fact that the UK's growth forecasts have been downgraded by the IMF. I think the one thing everybody agrees on is that we need more enterprise and more entrepreneurs, whatever your politics, whatever your views. And at JMU, they do an awful lot of work to try and encourage and support young people to do just that. And Emma, I know this week we've had a bag full of great news in terms of some of the individuals that you work with as far as awards and various acknowledgements, shall we say, that have come forward this week.
That's right, we've had two really standout news stories this week. The first is about the Morgan Foundation Awards, which is an awards programme set up by Steve Morgan, who started Red Row Homes. And we found out this week that three of our enterprise fellows, who are the recipients of our startup programme, three from this year have been shortlisted to go forward for two of the awards. That all women. It's fantastic news. I'm really, really proud of their achievements so far.
Isn't that fantastic? And yeah, do you know the one thing I will say as well is that we had an awards dinner in Lancashire on Thursday and half of the winners were female, which I thought was absolutely tremendous. And I've seen a significant shift over the past few years in terms of the number of women that are now actually getting stuck in and starting their own businesses. Is it because of the sort of support infrastructure places like JMU offer them?
Well, I would hope so. I mean, certainly of our client base, it's about half and half. We've never seen, men overtaking women in the startups coming forward. I'm just pleased that there's three young women on the shortlist this time. Oh. We have had good news regarding a male entrepreneur as well. Right. James Rowan, who we helped start up in 2009, has been named as Northwest Insider magazine's list of 42 entrepreneurs under the age of 42.
Very good. But very prestigious list to get in. Michael Taylor's the editor of Insider. He's been on the programme a couple of times. And I know that if you go back for the many years that they've been doing that list, most of the people that they name every single year, they bring them together every year as well. Mm-hmm. So it's grown into a really strong network. But the vast majority of people who are named in that list do go on to do great things. So I'm sure that will be no exception with your guy there. And as you say, another testament to the great work that JMU are doing.
Mm-hmm.
Just going back to that point about female entrepreneurship, Alison, because again, you know, putting party politics aside, I think it's something administrations over the years have all struggled with. And there has been a report published recently to suggest that PLCs, for example, should have to have a quota of females on the board. Is that something that you think is worth the private sector seriously considering? Should government be involving itself to that extent?
Well, I know the private sector won't like being told what to do, but I would say to all businesses, you know, you need a range of people. Great leaders come from all different backgrounds, and there's a lot of evidence out there that diversity in your leadership group enables new ideas and people to think things through from different directions. And if you're in a business and needs a generation of ideas, that having diversity in the board is a thing to do, and that will bring higher increased growth over time. Whether government can force businesses, I think, is a question we'll deal with as we go forward. The best businesses that I know want to do it anyway, and it's about how you do it, how you build those networks to enable people to do it, is as much a question as how you might compel people to do it from the top. I think actually
you know, across all walks of life in politics for a long time, we've struggled with how you make sure that, that women are able to get to the top as well. I know the best businesses in Merseyside and across the country are trying to deal with that question as well. But it's really heartening to hear from Emma that actually at the startup level, we've got a huge number of women coming forward. And I would hope that we can put in place some of the frameworks that will help those women develop their skills and promote themselves and make sure that their businesses grow in the way that we want them to.
I think it is vitally important that we start to look at how we can put those support structures in place. And I'm only surprised that there hasn't been more done, because I think when you're starting out as a young woman, that's fine. But whether we like it or not, there is a culture, almost an expectancy in this country, I think, that, you know, once it comes to family, then the female of the family takes the principal role. And I think unless and until we can shift that mindset significantly, then what we do need to do is really start to invest in good childcare provision, make sure that women are supported when they do want to go back and continue to run and manage their own business. And, you know, again, if we go back to Lancashire, one of the women who won the award for Young Entrepreneur of the Year, single parent, was really struggling just to get to the awards dinner on Thursday night because of babysitting problems and so on and so forth. Thankfully, she managed to do it. One woman called Nikki Hesford, who's got a fantastic business. So, you know, I think that there is a gap there that the government needs to look at, as well as saying to businesses and encouraging businesses to actually start to promote women where it's appropriate. But the point you made there, Alison, about politics and political parties, Labour Party introduced all women shortlists, which I was a big supporter of. And it has actually made a difference, hasn't it?
It has. I was selected on an all-women shortlist. And actually, I think people always say, oh, you know, do you get good quality of candidates or whatever? I hope my constituents think I do a decent enough job.
I think
for
they need to look at some of the men in Parliament before they make that comment. No, you can't say that, but I can.
Well, exactly. You know, and actually, the vast majority of women I speak to, and many, many men, in Wirral and Merseyside and beyond, think now that they see an increased number of women in politics, they think, of course, it's the right thing. You know, it was quite a controversial thing to do at the time, but now we've got the results of it, people think, of course, it's the right thing to do. As I say, I'm not a sort of politician who, in general terms, likes telling business what to do. But one of the things I think we could do is look at some of the reporting that happens. So, you know, we know that there is this problem of women not getting, you know, promoted necessarily because of, as you said, the them being assumed as having the childcare responsibilities. So gender pay audits, I think, are an important thing for companies just once a year. Just have a look at the balance of men and women and how much on average you pay each and make sure it is fair, because you might be surprised themselves. You know, one thing that worries me is we've got a huge increase in number of apprentices just now, which is fantastic. It's what I campaigned for. It's what I've called for all the time I've been in politics. But some of the issues there is that whether women are accessing, you know, the better paid opportunities. And we've got to encourage companies to report on what they're doing on childcare, what they're doing on pay for women, to make sure that you reveal by that information whether we're doing enough. And I think probably we all know we're not. So let's look for, you know, strategies, support networks, things that can be done to support women getting into business and making the best of it when they get there.
And if you'd actually take the Merseyside intake of MPs, certainly Liverpool, there's an awful lot of women, isn't there?
Yeah, it's a credit to the Merseyside people that they're quite fond of electing women, actually.
So you've got yourself on Wirral Est. In fact, all women on the Wirral, isn't it?
Apart from Frank Field.
Oh, of course, yeah. How can I forget Frank Field?
3 out of 4 ain't bad.
In Liverpool, it's 3 out of 5.
Yeah, absolutely. All credit to the people of Merseyside. They do a good job for the women of this country in, you know, sending. I've got all good colleagues on Merseyside. Other areas of the country are not so good. We've still got a little bit of a way to go, but I think we will get there. I think there's broad support now for, you know, positive measures of whatever kind to make sure that we elect women. We're still only 1 in 5 in Parliament, and leaders of councils as well. You know, we've got Mary Rimmer, who's a fantastic leader of St Helens, but we need to do more on that. So we've come a huge way in recent years, but I think we've still got a little bit further to go. And perhaps we in Merseyside need to demonstrate to the rest of the country how it can be done.
Well, I suppose that's what the business argument would be, isn't it? You know, if politicians want to dictate to businesses in terms of female representation, they need to start to get their own house in order.
And Labour we walk the walk on Merseyside, but let's make sure that everybody else elsewhere does.
Not wanting to make a party political point at all about this, are the Tory party introducing measures similar to those that the Labour Party introduced? Because I know, certainly in his early days as leader, David Cameron was trying to put something through the constitution that would enable the Tories to increase female representation as well.
They went down a slightly different route from us. They didn't go for all women shortlists for parliamentarians. They had a thing that they called the A-list, where they selected a higher number of women and people from non-white backgrounds who they tried to promote in safe seats. And I think they've had some limited success with that. I mean, it has been noticeably different. The 2010 intake of members of parliament on all sides of the house has been more diverse and had more women. What they'll do next time, I'm not sure. As you're reducing the number of members of parliament, which the prime minister wants to do, he needs to be careful that he doesn't end up taking us a step backwards. And I would hope, you know, party politics aside, I would hope that the Conservative Party have learned through demonstrating that when you have women involved, more involved in politics, you get better decisions, you get better quality decisions. And so I hope that they've learned and that they've won some of those arguments internally. Certainly in the Labour Party, you know, there's no going back for us. Mm. I think we all know that there is absolutely no going back to the days when, you know, to be a woman in Parliament was a difficult and rare thing. I think, you know, we had something like 25 women MPs in 1945, and we suddenly had 25 in about 1987. So, you know, I think there's no going back to those days now. We've made the case, and the feedback I get from people on the street is that they quite like it.
Mm. Well, it's certainly more progressive, and as I say, it's probably not the best time to discuss the reputations of Parliament, whatever the makeup of the place is. But I certainly see a difference in terms of the culture and the climate down there, and I think it's far more positive than it used to be. Just going back to this question of enterprise then and entrepreneurs, I asked Alison earlier what she would say to the Chancellor to encourage business people to grow, to be taking more people on as far as staff are concerned. Emma, from your perspective, working with new startup businesses, are there any specific things that you'd like to hear George Osborne saying in Manchester next week? Is there any specific initiative, particular things that he can say where you would say, well, do you know what, that's really going to be a boost to the people I work with?
Well, in terms of the people that we work with, I think anything around looking at the repayment terms for student debt if you start a business. So if, for instance, you start a new business up to 5 years after you graduate, then there would be advantages in terms of your student loan. It's the only way to incentivise people to take that risk.
Mm. And it's something that I've not heard suggested before. I'm sure it has been, but hopefully that will be something that's looked at. The other things that, you know, businesses will continue to complain about, and rightly so. I mean, Alison, you mentioned HMRI. They are far more aggressive than has previously been the case. That's no question about that. We get complaints from our members all the time about the approach that they're taking.
Tell them to go and see their Member of Parliament. I would always encourage every business in my constituency, if they've got a problem, come straight to me, because A, I want to know about it. B, I might be able to do something to help.
Okay, and the other thing, red tape, which all of you say you're going to cut, and none of you do. So anything that you're mindful of that George or Co are going to come up with and start looking at cutting some of the bureaucracy we face at the moment?
Well, there's red tape in my view. I mean, you know, the Tories love to bang on about health and safety legislation, even though it saved lives. They love to, you know, bang on about rights at work, even though, as we were just saying, we want people to have a flexible working life where they can take care of a child or perhaps even an elderly parent as they do their job. So for me, I think, it's got to be about making government work for business. Government have got to learn that business are, in many cases, their customers, and they've got to deliver them a good service. You want to see some of the letters that I get shown by businesses that they've been written that even I can't understand, you know, and it's my job. So I think we've got to look at the quality of services that businesses get from government.
Okay. And with all those ideas, views and opinions, and I'm sure Mr. Osborne's listening this morning, I can't wait to hear his speech in Manchester next week. Before then, we'll have a range of Labour spokesmen telling us how it should really be done. But welcome to Liverpool to all the Labour delegates. We're sure you'll have a fantastic week here this week. That's it from me, Frank McKenna, and City Talks Business. Thanks to my guests, thanks to my producer, Jonathan Dean, and most of all, thank you for listening. Have a great week, and don't do anything that I wouldn't do.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9. Listen and log on to great music and great conversation on City Talk 105.9.